Welcome to the Strong Starts podcast with your hosts, Jessica Whitehead and Sarah Gerber-Kai.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. Welcome to our first episode of the Strong Starts podcast. My name is Sarah, and with me is Jessica. Jessica, how are you doing?
Good. Went to the farmer's market today, got some good goodies. The weather was nice outside. We're starting a podcast, so that's pretty cool. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It was not too hot today, but still got some of that sunshine, and I'm excited to be here. This is our first podcast episode. It's exciting.
It is. It's so crazy that this is coming together. We had this vision, and it's really nice to see that we're finally hitting the record button.
Absolutely. So thank you to everybody who's joining us today. This is Strong Starts. Strong Starts is a professional learning community that Jessica and I are kicking off. It's also a podcast, but more than that, it's a network of support for people in education and other helping professions. It's our big dream for a lot of things, I feel like.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
We're going to cover today, let's see, in this episode, I think we're going to be discussing a little bit about what we're about and diving into our origin story just a bit, how we came to start this work with educators and other helping professionals, and building the systems of behavior support, as well as what you all can expect from future episodes.
Yes, we wanted to start here because we get asked why we do this work, how we do this work, and how we keep going in this work. It's been really great because Sarah and I have been asked to do a few things together to help others, and we thought we could extend that out and hopefully help build a community around that. I think we're also going to be diving in deep throughout many episodes at the heart of creating these powerful beginnings and the impact that has for students. We're also going to be diving into a fun topic that people may have thoughts about, but I like to say adults are the problem, right? And when we reference that—
Very fun topic.
Right? It's hard to hear. But when we do discuss that, know that we're coming from a good place. We're not saying that this teacher is the problem, this paraprofessional is the problem, or Sarah's the problem. What we're saying is adults are the problem in the sense of how the systems are built to support behavior, to support students and their learning, and how we really do have this big impact on that as adults. Students don't create the systems, adults do. And it really comes down to how are we building the systems to support students, but also how are we building systems to support each other as professionals?
Yeah, 100%. All blame, shame, guilt, we're going to leave it at the door.
Yes.
This is just open conversation to dig into the sometimes hard to digest truths about the work that we do, but important, right? Worth it.
Right.
But before we jump in a little bit into that, can we talk a little bit about our professional origin story? How did this all come to be?
If I'm going to start, I'm currently a board certified behavior analyst, a BCBA. I was a teacher. I was in the classroom in education as an instructional coach, a multilingual teacher. And one way or another, I served students for 16 years before starting this journey. This is my third year in this role, my second year as an actual certified BCBA. I've always had an elementary focus in teaching upper elementary grades. This is my first real deep dive into those early years and early elementary. I have experience as a teacher before this, which has been really helpful as I become a BCBA in the school setting versus a clinical setting.
100%. Well, and Jessica and I, we work at the same school. I'm there as a school counselor. In life, I'm a clinical social worker. But you and I really kind of bonded over having some of those tough conversations, about behavior and what is at the root of it, and kind of finding some of the overlap between our professions.
Oh, for sure. When we got hired at the same year, and I don't know if we knew what we were getting into at these early these early learners, because I know your experience is more with older learners, right? Before you started here.
Yeah, mostly high school, like teens and young adults. Those are my peeps. So diving into working with early elementary, which is where I'm at right now and where Jessica, you and I collaborate the most, it was a completely different experience. There's some really on the face of it big behavior stuff going on.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And I don't think I knew the big behaviors that could be trapped in these little bodies, right? And so we have these little guys, and they just communicate in very big ways. And so we had to really dive deep into that piece of our jobs and what we did at that school. And we discovered over time and spending time together that our jobs do overlap. But it wasn't that way at first. It took us a little bit to find how we work together. And I know at first, Sarah actually had some hesitations with working with the BCBA.
Yeah, just a little bit. I think, you know, we get really caught up in, you know, this is what I do and this is the discipline that I come from. And I mean, that's a pervasive problem. It feels like across the profession is just everybody coming at education or at like helping people with one particular angle. And I had heard some not so flattering, I'm sorry, Jessica, not so flattering stories about ABA and behavior and analysis from families that I had worked with before. But I think we found there's more common ground than not. I think, and finding like that, working through that messy middle of the kind of like therapeutic mental health side versus behavior, which is really, like you said, like that, the way that need is communicated, the way feelings are communicated. It's been a really helpful experience for me.
Yeah, I mean, anyone can do an internet search on ABA practices and find some really controversial articles. ABA doesn't have a good, you know, good reputation with everybody. There's some really great people that have done great things in ABA, and there are some people who haven't. I think it's like any profession. You have those few that ruin it for everybody, you know, and so I'm really happy, though, with the way ABA is evolving over time. And there are some people who are doing some great things. Like Dr. Hanley is focusing on the compassionate side of ABA, which I really respect. But what Sarah and I found by working together is that social needs, these social emotional needs were impacting behavior in big ways. And it was something that behavior plans on their own were not the answer, right? I can't slap a behavior plan on every single problem and just hope for the best. It really comes down to not just how we're providing a behavior intervention, but meeting the needs of students. And that's something that Sarah and I had some really big discussions about.
Well, and it wasn't working for the students, and it wasn't working for the adults. I mean, so many times you and I would talk about how frustrated we were, you know, thinking, okay, we've been trying the things that we've been taught how to do, like what to do, and it's not working. And the students are suffering, and the adults are tired and frustrated and feeling burned out. And so we really met in the middle, I think, on having some wild ideas. I'll say at least big ideas. You, most of all, you are frequently coming to my office with very big ideas. But I think that's where we met in the middle is, and really where this Strong Starts grew out of, is how can we pull back for a second and look at the bigger picture here, and what's going on in the whole ecosystem?
Yes, I interrupt Sarah frequently at work and tend to convince her to join some of my crazy ideas. It's fun too. And as you learn about us in these episodes, you're going to learn that Sarah is definitely the calm side to what we do. And I'm more the impulsive, let's get things done. And so we find that that actually meshes pretty well. It works.
It's a dynamic that definitely works. We don't need to fix it.
No.
But, you know, when we've started kicking off some of these like bigger questions about, okay, I know that I can't just slap a behavior plan on this problem. Mm-hmm. And the problem not being the student, just to be very clear, but just on the problem that is happening in the classroom. We start having those big ideas. We realized pretty quickly we needed to grow our team because we could not do it by ourselves in isolation. And a lot of people are impacted by those big decisions that, you know, each of us as professionals make every day to support students. And ultimately, that's what we want, right? We want kind of like the biggest bang for our buck in terms of the impact that we're making. So we kind of had to lean into that, into trusting each other and trusting our teams and growing those teams and having some of those really hard conversations with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a teacher, and I'm sure if you're an educator listening in, getting one more behavior plan for a single student in your class while you're teaching all these other students, you're meeting this need, this student's an IEP, this student has, you know, there's a communication barrier, this student has a behavior plan, this student has a behavior plan, oh, I'm tracking data on this student. There are those moments where you're going to pull your hair out. If someone tells me to do one more thing as I'm doing all these other things, I'm done. Teachers, educators, admin, EAs, paras, their plates are full and nothing is coming off those plates. We're getting handed another plate with more stuff on it all the time. And so I think that's something we've really focused on too is, okay, I can give this to a teacher. I can wrap up this behavior plan, give it to them on a silver platter. It really comes down, do they have the capacity to implement it? Not just the capacity as in, you know, the resources, but also do they have the time in their classroom to implement it? Do they have the ability with everything going on to put this in place?
Yeah, 100%. And you think about it, I mean, no system ever operates where each person is just doing their role, or at least I don't know of one, where each person can do their role completely in isolation and it be successful. And that's gone back. That's our human history is, you know, even when we were in like hunter-gatherer societies, a group of folks were out doing the hunting and a group of folks were doing the gathering. But, you know, if you're out hunting and you see a place to be able to gather food where it'd be good for your community to go, you're going to bring that information and that knowledge back with you. And you're going to support the rest of the society so that we can all function better. And when we think about it, it makes sense, but you're right. Time's a barrier. Opportunity is a barrier. And sometimes even our own like habits and kind of ways of thinking can be a barrier too. I think that's some of what we've had to unpack in those tough conversations is the idea of, well, we've always done it this way. So isn't that the way that we continue to do it? But I don't know. Why do you think we've focused, because we really have taken primarily a systems approach. Why do you think we focus on that systems approach?
Well, I think one thing we have learned is that we can do stuff at the very basic foundational level to prevent problem behaviors from occurring and prevent these major disruptions in the classroom. Because we're evacuating rooms, kids are throwing chairs, and this isn't just happening in our setting. My partner teacher that I had in Wyoming has told me this is happening. I mean, my husband's school district, friends that I have, family that I have, these big behaviors are happening everywhere. And if you are listening to this, you've probably been impacted by a big behavior as a parent, as a friend, as a family member, a professional, maybe as a student yourself in one way, shape, or form. And so what we realize is we've got to do something. We can't keep being firefighters in our role. There's got to be stuff we can prevent. And so when we think about even building a house, right? We can, if you're a homeowner or have ever been a homeowner, the repairs never stop. There's always something to do with your house, right? Oh my endless. Gosh. Endless things. I know my list for my husband keeps growing on all the things that we've got to do around here. But that foundation, that's what really sets up the house. The stronger that is, the better framing there is, the better plumbing there is, the less you're going to have to do later. There still may be problems down the road, but that foundation is really what sets the stage for that house. So when we think about that in education, it is the same. The stronger foundation we have for learners, the better it's going to be. And I'm not just talking about an isolation in one classroom. Sure, that's going to help. But it takes more than just a classroom. It takes a system-wide approach. And so when we make these decisions, it can impact a large group of people. It can impact the entire building. And that's really what we want, right? We want to spread this impact so that teachers don't feel this heavy load. So small groups of students that are doing a reading intervention can focus on the reading, and learning can take place building wide.
Right. No, that while you were saying that, I was thinking, oh yeah, that's true. Like, you wouldn't expect somebody to come and put up the walls of the house if there wasn't the foundation.
Right.
Even in my Hopefully very not. Limited knowledge of construction and carpentry, I'm like, yeah, no, that wouldn't work. But you're right. Like, and the frustration is felt everywhere. I mean, when we're collaborating with clinics, with clinicians, even in their own settings, they can still feel that sense of, you know, okay, we're working on this here. Why aren't the tools that we're working on applying to other settings? Why aren't we finding success in other settings? And families are feeling that frustration. Students themselves are feeling the frustrations. You know, you talk to any student and nobody's coming into any kind of situation wanting to be a problem that day, to throw a chair that day. And so that foundation piece is so important. And I think too, one of the things that really hits home with me is when we've had some of those tough conversations with educators in particular, and there's kind of this expectation, I think, in our society that educators are going to wake up and go to work and do the job because they care and because their hearts are big. And yes, whatever comes up that day in the classroom, oh, teachers are just, they're the most selfless people. And, you know, we're just so grateful for them. Thank you, teachers, for just doing what you do. And also the underlying is continue to do it and continue to do it by yourself. And it's just not possible. And you said it's not successful for anybody. And there's so much burnout that comes with that. But it's also it feels as a social worker, I feel it. It feels like a moral failing sometimes. So, you know, when we're having those conversations about systems, you know, how do we talk to educators who feel like, well, but that's not my purview. I'm not an administrator. I can't affect systemic change. There I am again with phrases. I can't affect systemic change, or I can't impact what's happening foundationally. Jessica, help me. What do I do?
Right? And that's so – being a teacher, I feel that. I feel that for them. Yeah. I've been in a situation in my classroom where I'm like, I can only do so much. I'm only one person. How can I get all these people on board with my crazy idea? And how can I make that systemic change? And to be honest, we can't alone. We can try. We can make these little, you know, ripples, and we can make impact. We can start with a colleague. We can start here with our team. But that's what that is. We need other people to make this systemic change. Trying to do it in isolation is so difficult. You can do it in your classroom. I've done it, and it's hard work to do it on my own. But really where the big impact is when you have other people by your side. And that's really what we need in education. This is a big field with a big responsibility. We are educating future leaders, hopefully future citizens that will hopefully make a difference. And we need a team to do that. This is not my student. This needs to be all of our students. And when we can think that way and we can develop these systems that support that thinking, we will make a greater impact. And And so I think about the teams we made, and we were kind of forced into teams, and not in a bad way. We had all these things happening and it was so much. We were all going on all these different directions and we're thinking, okay, we can't do this anymore. And we said that not in the sense that we're quitting our jobs. We said that we cannot continue to do what we're doing because we are not seeing a result that's helpful, that's creating a positive change, that's creating a positive learning environment. And so we had to come together and say, hey, this has got to stop and we need to figure out something else.
Oh, yeah. And we pulled in a lot of folks. I was so in my own little bubble. And I think we all were. I mean, that's what happens when you have to be reactive all the time. But we've pulled in, you know, speech and OT, you know, occupational therapists, pull in admin. So there's wide teams. We'll definitely be digging into that more in future episodes about building those teams because that was such a critical part of this process. But when you were talking before, the phrase that kept coming to mind was, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yes.
And I think that's where, when we talk about adults are the problem, shifting away from that blame and just understanding that we have a lot of power. It might not always feel like it, but we are so influential over this group of young people, of little bodies, or maybe somewhat big bodies if you're in middle school or high school. And there's a lot of responsibility there. And no, we can't do it alone. And yes, it requires some systems, different ways of thinking, different ways of supporting one another. But we're going to be digging into some of those some of those pieces that we can control. When we think about our circle of control, some of the things that actually are in each of our control to influence behavior and connection in your setting. So that's exciting to me.
It is exciting. And I think that another piece that, you know, when we talk about adults being the problem, and I say that lightheartedly, really.
Yes. And with love, a lot of love.
And with love, a lot of, and as an adult myself that had to fix her own things. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing we do have to do is not only think of what's in our control, but we also have to relinquish control. Mm. And when you run your own classroom, you tend to be focused on that control, right? I run it this way. I do this in my room. If you're an EA or a paraprofessional, this is how I might run my reading groups, or this is how I run things at Recess Duty. And really, as when you come together as a team, that's when you're saying, you know what? My expertise is not in this. I need to draw from somebody else. And you have to admit that. And it's not admitting failure at all. It's admitting that you can be even more successful than you already are when you have that brain power. And so when you talked about occupational therapy, you know, so people know that's fine motor, but that's also sensory needs. And OTs have such a wealth of knowledge in that area. And we talk about communication impacting behavior. Speech paths, that is their thing. Communication is their niche, right? That's what they focus on. And so bringing that into what we do is so helpful, and not taking these and, oh, I'm a speech path and I'm a BCBA and I'm a therapist and this is how we separate. No, it's how we come together and how we make our worlds work. And we can continue to work individually with kids in our own fields, separate from each other, but we're not going to make the change we want. If we can come together, that's where we're going to experience that for sure.
I love that you talked about relinquishing control. I hadn't thought of it that way. We also have to relinquish some of the control. We talk about that in mental health too, right? When we're thinking about anxiety and the need to feel in control of everything and how mindfulness is really about kind of letting some of that go and just being really accepting what is happening. And what is often happening is that we do need a team, is that we've tried it too long, we've been trying to control all of it, trying to do all of it ourselves. And I think too about the power of working in teams and the fact that, you know, some days when I show up at work, all I have to give is just being a semi-awake body.
Yes. And, yes.
And just, you know, it's real, folks. Like, at the some days it's a paycheck and I just got to show up, and I couldn't take a sick day that day for whatever reason, even though I probably needed to. And so, but I know I have Jessica there or somebody else there on my team who remembers the big picture and what it is that we're working towards and can guide me through that. And so some days or weeks or months or, you know, quite frankly, sometimes even just some years in our profession, we're just gliding through and trying to survive and give what we can, and having teams to rely on who can kind of keep you centered in the purpose, in that why, it's really a powerful thing.
Oh, so powerful. And when you said sometimes when you come to work, you're barely like, you know, you're barely awake.
Barely
you're barely keeping your crap together. We all have stuff outside of work that impacts us. I mean, there's days where my behavior knowledge, my ABA goes out the door. I'm telling my kids, just get the heck in the car. And
yes,
blah, 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 blah. And I'm that kind of mom that morning. I come to work. I'm not at my 100. And if you're a Brené Brown listener, she does a great example of being at your 100 and what that means. And my husband and I use that phrase. We're a team as parents, and together we make 100. And sometimes I can bring my half, my 50 to this 100, and sometimes I can't. Sometimes I can only bring my 20 and I need him to be at 80% that day, 80% of our team. And so that's true. We're not always bringing the equal part. There's days, there's times, there's situations with kids. And we have found that out as a team. There are some days where I need to heavily, oh my gosh, this is happening with a kid. I need to heavily rely on Sarah for this. This is more her area of expertise. I have to step back. There's been times where she gives me this look like, Jessica, you're in for this one. And there's times that her and I are together with a kid and we're equally a part of the situation, as well as other members of our team. And so I think that's going to be a big part of our conversations, is not just what a team is, but how to be a part of a team, how we're all a part of the system, and how we interact together.
Well, in clearly setting up, because I don't think any of that would have worked for us, for you and I as a team, if we hadn't already set up, okay, these are the expectations. These are, this is how we're going to handle any given situation. And obviously, like, you can't, there isn't a blueprint for every single situation, but these are our guiding principles of how we're going to work with a student and when we're going to know to tap out, when we're going to go, you know, this child needs co-regulation right now. And I am a dysregulated adult. So I know that the expectation is I'm going to tap out. I'm going to tap Jessica in. But when you talked about that foundation, all those pieces are foundational pieces, the training, the setting up protocols and procedures and expectations and norms for us as professionals, so that in those situations, on those days where I can only give 20%, I know that my colleague knows what to do and is going to step in and do what's best for that student. It's a lot of trust that was built in those teams.
Yes. And we acknowledge that we're very lucky with this dynamic. Mm-hmm. We admit, and we know from experience that other people are not as lucky to find this kind of team. So we will address that as well. Because I think that's something very important that we need to acknowledge, is you don't always look out with finding the yin to your yang, you know, in teams. But one thing we also have to realize as a collective, that these behavior problems that we're experiencing are not going away. In my 16 years in just the educational field, not being a BCBA, I saw these behavior changes happening. Every year, it just seemed like, oh, these more extreme behaviors happening right in the middle of my classroom. I mean, I had the gamut. And I worked even in an affluent population. So I've worked with different population, high needs, high classroom numbers. I've worked with a lot of languages in a classroom. And I've also worked with the affluent population. And no matter what population I worked with, I saw these increasing, these behavior problems. Mm-hmm. And it would be in the middle of me feeling like I'm teaching well, like, oh, this lesson is going great. And something triggered somebody. And right, this thing happens. Yeah. We're evacuating a room. And so I think we need to understand that this is not going away. It's a trend that we're seeing across the nation in so many different graphs that I've seen from different districts. Oh my gosh, look at our suspension rate. Look at this rate. Look at this rate. It is happening and it's not going away. So we can continue being firefighters and doing these reactive responses, but we're not going to get any different result if we continue that. And so, you know, what is it? Einstein says, if we keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And so we're only going to make change if we make the change. And we're going to talk about that as well, is what happens when we decide we're going to be the ones to change. And so that'll be in a future episode. But yeah, if we're going to keep being reactionary, we're going to keep getting these behaviors.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but my stomach just tightened as you were saying that. So shout out to anybody else out there who operates a little bit on anxious, who has a little bit of an overactive amygdala and got a little nervous. We talked about, oh, it's not going away, folks. But hopefully, you know, talking about it, I mean, I think when it comes to anxiety, we always got to name it and own it, right? And so when we're having these conversations, I hope that that can come across too, is we're naming it so that we can see it for what it is and then own it. Because it's the same thing in mental health, Jessica. Like this, none of it's going away. Like our communities are experiencing traumas. You know, the more that we are able to see what's going on in the world and the trauma throughout the world, we're feeling that. Our nervous systems are feeling that. And our young people, their brains aren't developed yet to be able to process those things that are happening. And so we're going to see those behaviors communicating that people aren't always doing okay. And I think if we can name it and we can see it and we can own that that's what's happening, then we can address it. That's my hope.
Absolutely.
Too,
oh, sure. And we're not going to lie to you and tell you, oh, we're just going to give you these simple tips and tricks and it's going to be so easy for you to implement. That is not going to happen, right? I hope there are going to be some easy takeaways for you. But know that we're also on this journey as well. And there has been some really great moments. There has been some things that we've stumbled over along the way. And hopefully you can learn from both the good and the hard at the same time. But we can promise you real stories, real strategies, real ups and downs that we faced, and hopefully ways that you can prevent these problem behaviors from occurring for the most part. I think no matter what we do, we're still going to experience them, but hopefully we can reduce the amount of problem behavior you're seeing for you. And hopefully you can find a benefit, not just for you, but for all the students that you work with and see that positive impact in your building.
100%, 100%, and still be able to walk away at the end of the day feeling fulfilled and feeling like, hey, I did what I set out to do, even though no promises of 100% every day. I think that would be completely unrealistic for anybody at work, but to be able to address that burnout head on and provide ourselves with some permission for some professional self-care, which I think we'll be talking about too.
Oh, geez, because the burnout is real right now.
It's so real. And we need a community. We know that we're social creatures, even though you and I are introverts and tend to refuel on our own time. We're still social creatures. We need our community. And strong starts, that's why we started. That's why we started this community, is to be able to pull in more folks, to grow our network, and be able to really like lean into one another, because there's so much experience and so much wealth of knowledge among this community of professionals. So we want to be able to reach out to you. We want to be able to hear from you. We want to invite you in to engage with this work, also engage in these hard conversations.
Yes. And know that we don't have all the answers at all. We'll give our ideas, but we're also hoping that other people can jump in, join the conversation. We'll be bringing guests onto our show throughout different episodes. We hope. We hope we get people to agree and that you can learn from them as well. And we're hoping that you comment, you add your thoughts to our posts, you like and follow so that you can join us as well. So there are a few ways to get involved with our community. Mm-hmm. You can subscribe to this podcast wherever you are listening so you can be notified of the new episode. And you can also follow at Strong Starts Podcast on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook to get connected. Start conversations, put out questions to the community that hopefully other people can join in the discussion as well.
Absolutely. And if you'd like to get in touch with us directly, you can email us at strongstartspodcast@gmail.com. If you have some ideas for future episodes, for guests to have on, if you have questions or even just maybe a project you want to collaborate on, or even if you just want to say hi, reach out to us via email so that we can build our community. And thank you so much to everybody for joining us today. And we will talk with you soon.
Yeah, because we hope to put out a new podcast every other week.
Yes.
That's our goal so far. So if you do subscribe, you'll be notified when that comes out. You can also anticipate, if you follow us on social media, possible blooper reels, because this is our first time recording a podcast and we're learning a lot. We're learning by trying. This is a result of multiple takes. If you're listening, know that this is not just our first take recording. So hopefully you can put out some blooper reels as well and you can hear our fumbles along the way.
Absolutely. If anything, join just for the blooper reels, because sometimes Jessica will just go off and say some incredible things that do have to get cut.
Yes.
So join us for the blooper
reels. Sarah's actually hope for that. Yes. Yes. As we said, she's the calm one to our group. So
yes.
There might be
some
spontaneous
things. And I love Jessica's big
ideas. Well, I'm glad you do, because I looped you into this crazy idea. So we'll see how it goes. And yes, thank you for everyone who joined us today and listened to this episode. And hopefully you join us on future episodes to see what is in store.
Yep. Thanks. Bye, guys.